It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, and we are so happy to have you with us on this day that we're talking about our health, physical health on the new year, and our financial health. And I want to welcome to the program, as always, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Bruce Helmer, and he's a financial advisor, as well as Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor, Peg Webb. Welcome to both of you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Peg Webb. Good morning, Susie Jones. And yes, thank you, Susie. You know, it's the time of year, although we're already late enough into the year that a lot of people maybe already broke their New Year's resolution to lose weight or go to the gym or whatever. But I was going to say it's the time of year where people try to, you know, go into a new year and make positive changes, quit smoking, lose weight, go to the gym more, whatever. But it's also, Peg, and listeners, I think a good time to get in touch and look at your financial well-being. So Peg and I have come up today with a list of 10 things that you can do for your own finance, what we're going to call a financial check. So, Peg, I think, you know, again, the things we're going to talk about today are always good ideas and always things that people should be focused on. But again, looking at the calendar, it just seems logical that when a lot of times when people look at a new beginning, look at a new year, look at making positive changes, why not incorporate financial improvement along with your health and wellness improvement? Peg?
You know, when I saw the outline, Bruce, and it says a 10-point financial wealth checkup, kind of. Well, 10 things. I mean, that just feels, anytime you go to double digits, it's going to feel a little bit overwhelming. So I just want to say, yes, we have 10 things. And it actually reminded me these 10 things. It's just so organized. And so I'll get right into it. But, you know, I am a goal setter. I have been a goal setter kind of mentally, even as a young person. Just, well, this is what I need to do. But the number one is goals and your financial literacy. Now, I don't want to spend a lot of time on goals because we do talk about them, but I am a personal goal sheet person, and I still use paper, Bruce. I'm not, you know, creating something, a spreadsheet on the internet. And what's fun about that is the folder that says goal setting has all the goals, you know, that go backwards, all the years that I've done it. And I'm such a believer in goal setting that I want to kind of emphasize having clear goals, even just, and I kind of recommend short term, you know, don't go too far out, because if you kind of bust your checklist and you go backwards, that's not good either. Now, you also need to understand just the basics like budgeting, savings, investment. And to me, it's more so just getting organized. If you can't get organized yourself, I would get help, because it's so important that you have the ability to look at how you're sitting today and then start to think about where you want to go. And that's where the goals come in. And so it's really about education and listening to Wealth Enhancement Group shows. I'll just throw in here, because I don't know that I've mentioned it for a very long time, that on wealthenhancement.com, if you go under resources, it says radio show. And you can listen to all of our podcasts that are on there, and they're clearly marked as to what did we talk about that particular day. Bruce?
Peg, I got to, you know, so number one is goals and financial literacy check. And I have to share a personal story really quickly, because it's so relevant. And you can't even make this stuff up, right? I'm not that creative. So I'm in Florida now, and I had a buddy slash business partner slash client, really good friend, longtime friend, very successful guy. And he and his wife paid Pamela and I a visit. They left yesterday, but we were out for a beach walk. And he says to me, at this point in your life now, what's your asset allocation? You talk and coach clients on this all the time. Where are you at with equities to fixed income to cash? And I was stunned, Peg, in that I couldn't give him an exact answer. I can ballpark it, and I can probably get pretty close, but he made me want to go back and look at all of my information and get more precise and more specific, because I couldn't give him a specific answer to his question. The cobbler's kid is barefoot here. I couldn't do myself what I ask clients to do. So it was really kind of hit me. And yesterday when we were talking, I hadn't really reviewed the outline for the show today. So I reviewed the outline and boom, number one, your goals and literacy check. And I couldn't give a specific answer. So I'm going to work on this one myself during the week. Peg?
Well, and I can't help say, Bruce, we have the Your Money Matrix. We talk about this, right? The 9 boxes. And what a great tool to just get so organized. Not only do you know what you have, but you actually know if it's short, medium, long money. And you also know what buckets have purposes, like short-term purposes or long-term purposes, and how it's taxed. So everybody listening, we've talked about this a lot, but this Your Money Matrix is golden. Number two is, what do you own and who do you owe? So now we're starting to make a financial net worth statement. You know, that's part of this organization that I talked about. And how can you possibly look forward or even backward if you don't have this? Now, here's Peg Webb again. I have a manual folder. I do my own financial inventory. I don't use autos. I don't use software, but I'm a manual person. I've got my folder, but my husband is a techie. So he's got everything downloaded. But here's the thing that I don't like about the computer is it kind of just changes every day, and it doesn't have like a snapshot of a time period. So my paper has a time, a date, and it's always December 31st of that particular year. How did I fall that year? Am I making progress, Bruce?
Yeah, and this one, number two, net worth check. This one I could do off the top of my head. Now, granted, these values are not stagnant. They're changing all the time. You're earning interest on your interest-bearing accounts. Your market exposure is up and down. But, I mean, within reason, this one I did know off the top of my head. So I felt a little bit better that I do know my net worth check. Peg, number three.
You know, number three is cash flow and spending check. And three, four, and five, to me, kind of go together. So I want to, so then we've got cash flow and spending check. We've actually got spending alignment check. And then we've got savings and retirement check. So let's start with cash flow. That's just, do you know where your money's going every month? We did a show a couple weeks ago about the good debt, bad debt. And we kind of covered, you know, where is your money going? And how much debt do you have? And is it good? Is it bad? But a lot of people don't track what they're spending and where is it going? Because I know there's a lot of aha faces that when I talk to people, and they just don't know. So once again, you have to get organized to know what you have. So is it basic manual, you know, paper, or is it something online, which is easy to find these days? I'm sorry, but you don't have a lot of excuses, because there's free things on the internet, these templates that you can fill in. And then, you know, the choices of what do you do with your money? You know, a lot of people live for today instead of, you know, saving for tomorrow. You have to have a balance. I witnessed this, Bruce, in that, you know, friends are traveling and they invite you to go. And you say, wait a second, what is that going to cost? You know, and do I want to take that money and go on this trip with these people that I'm not sure that I want to spend that part of my, you know, wealth on that, on being, this is terrible, but on being with these people. I'd rather my husband or my partner or something go on something if we're going to spend that kind of money, Bruce.
You know, you're right in combining, Peg. There's a lot of overlap between these 10 things. So you said number three, cash flow and spending check. Number four, spending alignment check. and number five, savings and retirement check. And part of the reason they're related, oftentimes, Peg, I feel like our job as a financial advisor is to find capital for our clients to use either for lifestyle enhancement, if that's their choice, because you and I both say it's okay to live for today as long as you're still planning for tomorrow. It's not an either or. You don't have to, you know, sacrifice lifestyle as long as you're planning for the future. You can still have fun today. But so often over the years, I've had people tell me, I know I should save and invest more for my retirement. I know I should do this. I know I should do that, but I don't have any extra money. And sometimes it's because the spending is inefficient. So if we can come in and find inefficiencies, we find a way to save you money in income taxes, as an example. We find a way to save you money on your insurance costs. We can reduce the cost of your property and casualty if you do this. We can reduce the cost of your life insurance. You have the right amount of life insurance, but you're paying more than you need to. You could do this. If we give them those dollars back, now they can use them for investments, for saving for their future, and or lifestyle enhancement, or a combination of both. But part of our job is to find them money by being more efficient in their spending. And we've talked about some of the obvious things. You know, are you paying for a gym membership and you don't go to the gym? Do you stop and get a $5 coffee every morning instead of making a 50-cent cup at home and things like that? But oftentimes, the spending inefficiencies are because of inefficiencies in your financial world that we can help correct. And then you have this found money to do what you want with. And again, Peg, the other thing I want to mention, you know, when we talk about spending alignment, it comes back to goals and objectives and your core values. I also can't tell you how many times over the years somebody's been spending money on something for immediate gratification today, and they're not doing something that they tell me is important to them, like saving for their kids' education or saving for retirement. And when you re-remind them of what's really important to them, what are your core values? What are you really trying to accomplish? It's easier to stay disciplined, and it's easier to forego some of the frivolous things that you might spend money on today for short-term gratification in order to have more money to achieve your real long-term goals and dreams. So you're absolutely right, Peg. All these are interconnected and related.
And my biggest pet peeve, and you know what, I rant about this all the time, is the internet and the TV costs. When I hear people are spending $500 to $600 a month for that, it's just insane. So how do you pull out some of that money and then start saving? So you got to look at your spending. And we always say you have to hide money from yourself. It's so easy to want to spend it, but what if it's hidden? And it's hidden by having your, let's say if you're employed and you have a paycheck, how easy is it for somebody like your employer to just pull that money out and it goes directly into a savings account? You have the ability to set up even more accounts with investment companies or just your bank and send it to these other related accounts that maybe are for something. And I can't tell you enough that hiding money from yourself, you will become a wealthier person. And, you know, you also have to look at how much you're saving and how the taxes intertwine with that. I know that's a big deal to all of a sudden bring up taxes. But if you're saving through your employer, you have a choice. You can tax defer, or you could maybe use tax advantage like Roth IRAs. You have decisions to make. And then when you look at those employee benefits that they offer, and I know you probably missed it, we're in January and they usually come out in November. If you don't understand all those benefits and the costs, get help. You don't have to do it alone. I think a lot of people don't want to kind of divulge what they are choosing, but even corporations now have somebody that can help or have your financial advisor look up those options for you and give you some insight, Bruce.
Yeah, good stuff. And again, all these 10 things, and they overlap, and there's a lot of detail in all of them. You know, it's easy for us to sit here and give a 10-item list of things, but then putting it into practice, it's doable, but it takes some effort and it takes some time. And I'm maybe getting a little bit ahead of myself because I think this is the 10th thing, but it also, for most people, it's very, very, very difficult to do on your own, and you're probably going to benefit if you get some help. So I think, where are we at? Have we covered five, Peg?
Yeah, so six is about debt, and that's where a couple weeks ago we did the good debt, bad debt. So I'll quickly say, you know, you have to control your debt, and you have to be aware of, you know, your credit scores. If you all of a sudden you need something and you need to borrow money, you should know, you know, how you sit with these credit card companies. And also, if you have a bunch of credit cards and you're not using them, I see that as a liability that people could get your numbers. So I'm a big fan of minimizing how many credit cards you have, and then getting the ones that have the best deal, right? The lowest interest or the ability to just pay it off. And then lastly, I would tell you, look at your credit score. You have those reports available to you, and make it an annual thing. You don't have to do it often, but make it an annual thing that you look at all the detail on those reports, Bruce.
Yeah, and having a lot of open possible credit places not only increases your risk and your vulnerability, but to that point, Peg, checking your credit score, it also probably reduces your credit rating. If you're not using those accounts, close them, shut them down. You're safer, and it'll help your credit rating. Peg?
Yeah, the seventh one is emergency fund. This is probably the toughest one because when people think about emergency funds and they need to be liquid if something negative happens, then you don't necessarily want to put it in a bank account that doesn't offer interest. Well, you can use a money market, which is also a liquid place. But we all have things that just all of a sudden are unexpected expenses. And sometimes you can just have a line of credit on something where you don't have to have money in a low interest account. You know, money markets used to be north of 5. Now they're more like 3.25, 3.5, which still is good for liquid money, but make sure that you're making money on that money and just have that liquidity. Number eight is investing and risk check. This one we talk about a lot, Bruce, because it actually does go back to goals and what's that money going to be used for? What allocation is appropriate for you? How much risk do you want to have to take or that you want to take? This is where I think a financial advisor really comes into play because I witness more so, Bruce, that people want to be more conservative than they actually can for the sole reason of longevity. People are just living longer. And so you have to take somewhat of a risk. And I know a lot of you listening are going to lose sleep over this because you don't want to risk that. But inflation is a big deal, too. So the combination of all of that, I highlight as one of the most important things. If you have money and you have savings, that you invest it well, mostly for the future, Bruce.
Yeah, and the story I told earlier about taking a walk with my buddy, I probably should have saved it for this one because, again, this is where I don't personally know right now of all my assets, what specifically is exposed to stocks versus fixed income versus cash. Again, I could ballpark it and get fairly close, but I'm really going to dig into that because, again, I'm an aggressive investor. I believe in the market in the long term. But I'm also, you know, I should not be taking as much risk or I should not be as focused on growth in my mid-60s as I was in my mid-40s. It's time for me, just like I would coach a client, to start putting more focus on preservation. If eventually I'll retire, then I'll be focused on income from my portfolio. So I need to personally take a good look at this again myself and make sure my asset allocation is appropriate for me. And if I can let it slip by, I can imagine most people listening probably need to do the same thing, Peg.
This is a really important number nine, your health and longevity. This is something where actually your health should be before your wealth, which I'm saying that because you have an asset. It's actually your body and your health. Nothing else matters if you're not here and you don't take care of yourself. So, you know, financial health is a really big deal, but this physical health goes hand in hand with that financial. And I'm a big proponent of health, you know, I think it's, Bruce, I really believe it's from living through all these other people's lives and not so much age, but just witnessing that as time goes on, there's things you can't do anymore. And so if you're listening to me today and, you know, we all have some time just working on your health, you know, what do you eat? Are you physically active? Just putting your health first is a huge deal, even though we're talking about financial health, but who cares about your money if you're not around, Bruce?
Yeah, Susie, I know we're almost out of time. So really quickly, you know, Father Time is undefeated, but Peg and I both believe in doing everything we can to fight it off as long as we can and have a great lifestyle at retirement and feel good and be able to do things. Susie, when we come back, we're almost done with our list. We'll finish up, but then we'll get listeners involved.
All right, and that is your cue. If you are listening, 651-461-9226. I'll say it one more time, 651-461-9226. If you have a question about your financial health after this. It is Your Money. It is the second half of Your Money. Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor and senior vice president, Peg Webb, also financial advisor. We're doing a financial health check for you as we start the new year and inviting you to be part of the program as well at 651-461-9226. Bruce, Peg, take it away.
Thank you, ringleader Susie Jones. Appreciate that. If you joined us late, listeners, as Susie mentioned, Peg and I have been talking about a financial health check, and we have a list of 10 different things that you can or should check on. We covered 9 of them. Number 1 was goals and financial literacy. Number 2 was net worth. Number 3 was cash flow and spending. 4 was spending alignment. 5, savings and retirement. 6, debt and credit. 7, emergency preparedness or having a rainy day fund. Number 8, investment in risk. And number 9, we talked about health and longevity. And the last one, Peg, that we didn't get to, I hinted at it earlier, but we never really talked about it. Number 10, professional support. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, so it's, as you just mentioned, the 9 again, it can be overwhelming. So you don't have to do it alone. I mean, there's a lot of support out there, meaning it could be your family, it could be your friends, you can get the right guidance. A lot of people decide that they want a professional like the Wealth Enhancement Group advisory or you know, ask around if you do need help. But there's so much complexity. There's just, you know, how much money do you have? Do you have the right assets in the right place? Do you have more, you already mentioned, do you have stocks? Do you have bonds? Are you prepared if there's a downturn? You know, in just knowing, Bruce, that you've got short money and long money and you're confident in that actually just gives people just a wonderful, relaxing kind of state of mind. Not that it is if there's a big downturn in the market, because then people mentally kind of change. We definitely come in guiding people and trying to eliminate, if we can, you know, the fear of a downturn and give the confidence. So I just think it's important that if you're trying to do this alone, and especially as we just went through this list again, it's a lot. It is just, you know, it's just a lot to know and do on your own. And it's not just for yourself. You're doing it for your whole family unit, which can be a lot on people's shoulders, Bruce.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing I would add is, you know, this financial health check, it's not like a one-time thing and then you're done. It's small, consistent improvements over time. Perfection is probably impossible, but it's maybe the goal, but you never achieve it. But you keep looking, you keep working. It's a process. You keep revisiting. It's part of comprehensive planning, and it's all based on, it starts with, every conversation with wealth enhancement will start with goals and objectives, core values, what's important to you, what do you want to achieve, what is your lifestyle going to look like, who are you going to help? And based on all of that, we devise a plan and a process. And it's, you know, Peg, you always like to say, you don't get the plan or you don't get to take your financial health check and write it down, plate it in gold, put it on a mantle and look at it like a decorative piece. It's an ongoing process that we revisit all the time, and we hold your hand and we help you with it. Last thoughts to you, Peg, and then maybe we'll get listeners involved.
Yeah, I know, because there were so many, there's 10 different things here. Wealthenhancement.com, once again, under resources, there's this word blog, you know, and right in the front page, when you hit blog, you have to scroll down a little bit, is this simple financial health check for any age? So if we went too fast, you didn't get to write it down, there's a lot more detail in that blog under resources, wealthenhancement.com.
Perfect. Susie, do we have, should we get listeners involved?
Sure. 651-461-9226. A texter writes this morning, good morning. How much money should I keep out of the market and put in a safe savings account? I've heard you should have 6 months of living expenses. How about this guy, this person? I'm 79. I have no debt. Thanks.
So it's a great question, Susie. And thank you, texter, for the for that text. Peg, when we went over this in the first section and we talked about, you know, rainy day fund or emergency preparedness, I think it was our seventh item, we didn't say how much it should be. We said you should do it. You need money that's in a safe place without market risk. Get the best interest rate you can. But safety and accessibility are really the top priorities. But then the question is, how much should that be? And the texter even mentions kind of our standard answer, 6 months living expenses, but that's, you know, that's a 10,000 foot answer, and that's going to change for each individual person. Peg, I always like to see more safe money as we get older, again, primarily because as we get older, our priority probably shifts from growth to preservation, and we don't want as much money in the market because we probably don't need as much return and we're not as focused on growth. But how much is enough? I mean, what should the asset allocation, what should it look like? This texter says they have no debt in their 70s. So based on that, and maybe even expanding it, how would you address that very, very, very good question?
Yeah, one of the things that we actually called this the financial shock absorber, you know, because we don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. We don't know. So it's a hard thing to define how much, because I actually like to make money on my money. And I mentioned about the money markets and having that money liquid. Just make sure it's not just sitting in the bank at zero, because banks still charge zero, they give you zero if you're not savvy enough to get in the right accounts. The other thing I like is if you're debt free, you can get a line of credit. You know, you can open one with a bank, and if something happens, then you have that ready to go. You can always pay it right off, but you can at least take time to get the smart place to take the money from if you have an emergency. The other thing is witnessing with a lot of the clients that I've worked with, you know, as you get older, you fear something going to happen. And I got to tell you, in my career, the medical bills that come to people, even if you're on Medicare, there is an impact financially. And then there's long-term care. That's something that no one even wants to talk about, Bruce, because the cost for long-term care, maybe you did insure yourself by buying a policy, but even if you did, it's right now it's not covering all the costs of that. You can't sit around with the what ifs and not make money on your money. You just have to be practical about where would I get the money from. And then I like the line of credit idea. If you have a net worth that they'll, the bank will just say, okay, I'll give you a line of credit for the what ifs. Bruce?
Yeah, that's a really good answer. You thought of a couple things, Peg, that I didn't. The only thing I would add you know, again, this idea of 6 month living expenses, I think, is a good benchmark if you're in your 30s, 40s, or maybe even your 50s. But I'd like to see more safe money as we get older. And one of the reasons is we talk all the time on this show about retirement income planning and spending the smartest money first. When we need money, when we want money, whether we are retired or we're close to retirement, where's the best place to go get that money? And let's give ourselves options. Let's not be stuck with only one place where we can get money. So we have some money in interest-bearing accounts with no market risk, and sometimes that's the best money to spend. Other times we may want to spend money that we have in the stock market. Like right now, where the stock market's at an all-time high, I might coach a client to say, why don't we take some winnings off the table and lock in those gains? But guess what? Nobody listening, I don't think, has forgotten 2008. So 2008, your equity portfolio is down 30, 40, 50% or more, and you need money. I don't want you selling stocks and liquidating at a low in the market. I want you to have enough cash or safe money that you can ride that out until the market recovers and nobody's forced to liquidate stocks or securities in a down market. So that for me, that's the biggest reason why I like to see more safe money as we get older. But again, it always comes back in my mind to what rate of return do you need or want? And I use those words simultaneously. They don't mean exactly the same thing, but you can kind of ask the question either way. What do you need or want? And then what do we need to do to get that return that you need or want? And let's get it with the least amount of risk possible. And that question then to me, probably more than anything else, is going to dictate how much safe money you have versus how much money you have exposed to stocks, which over the long term have historically given better returns, but there also is more volatility. Peg, last word to you.
No, you actually did that perfect, Bruce. I followed along and I went, that's so much sense. And then it's kind of an easy decision
right
at that point.
Next texter writes, at 651-461-9226-651. Goodness sakes, guys. I'm writing notes as we speak. I have notes on what you guys are saying. 651-461-9226. A texter wondered, does closing credit cards, as you mentioned earlier, affect your credit score? I had heard once that it did.
Yeah, so Peg, we did talk a little bit about this. So there's kind of a fine line here because on the one hand, having credit is a good thing and can enhance your credit score. We've talked on the show a lot before about there's certain people out there that have a philosophy of, I'm never going to borrow money. I'm never going to open a credit card. If I can't write a check or pay cash for it, I'm not going to buy it. I'm never going to have credit. And they think logically in their mind, that should give them a really good credit score because they never had to borrow money. But to enhance your credit score, the financial world, actually wants to see you borrow and then pay it off. That enhances your credit score. But Peg, we talked about closing, accounts, credit that we're not using, having that open and not using it, A, is probably detrimental to the credit score, but B, also makes you more vulnerable.
Yeah, they absolutely do kind of dock you if you close these cards. And I recently closed one that had a high credit limit. And I'm like, I don't need this thing. I'm just going to close it. And my husband and I did kind of a cleanup with all, and that's what I'm saying, get your credit reports. But yes, they can actually dock you. The question is, do you care? You know, a lot of people are concerned about what their credit rating is, but yet they don't really need to borrow any money. They don't need to change their finances. So I just encourage people to, the thought of getting compromised, you know, by somebody getting your information, or I just think that today we should lessen the amount of exposure out there And even if they would dock your credit card rate, which it sounds like they do still, I think it's worth it, Bruce.
Peg, I'm going to give a little context, but then I'm going to ask you a follow-up question. I think, here's the context, when you mentioned, you know, do you really care? Does it really matter what your credit score is if you're not planning to borrow money anyway? And it probably doesn't. But again, I think sometimes people end up maybe borrowing money when they didn't know they were going to or didn't expect to for any number of different reasons. And, you know, the terms and conditions of the loan you can get to some extent are going to be based on that credit score. But I think kind of the magic number, if you will, is 730. 730 and above, you're probably going to be able to get loans and get good terms and conditions. And below 730, you might want to work on improving that credit score. Is that the number that you have in your mind, or am I off base on that? Is that old information? Where are you on that? Do you know?
I haven't heard or recognized that lately. I just think people are more aware today of having that credit out there. That personally, that's what I lose sleep over, that, you know, somebody would get my information. And I know in this time era, we have to be cognizant of that and just see if it's worth, you know, closing the accounts, or I'm a big fan of just a cleanup.
Yeah. Bruce, 651-461-9226, a texter writes, we have CDs that are maturing this year. The interest rates are in the high fours and low fives. Are there better options than CDs? The forecast is significant to lower rates on CDs. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, Pagan, we talked a little bit in the last couple of weeks about this, but let's take a little bit of a deeper dive again, because, you know, when the texter quotes, you know, fours or maybe even five, my first instinct is, you know, that's a pretty good rate, and for safe money, I'd probably be happy with that. But there's other options as well.
Yeah. So the I take a picture of it so that I see the trends of what interest rates are doing. Remember, I've always been kind of a fan of the fixed income, the bond area, the, you know, what's happening in our fixed markets. So CDs, just as a general idea, is 3.8% for a 2-year, a 1-year is 3.7%. You can go all the way out to 10 years and get 4.1%. Now, I'm a fan of treasuries because treasuries for a 1-year is 3.5% and a 2-year is about the same. And why do I favor treasuries? I mean, it is a guarantee from the U.S. Treasury. And then also, if you're in a state like Minnesota, they're state income tax free. So you get a little bit of a boost over a CD. Now, some people say, well, where do I buy these treasuries? It's so easy to go in my bank and just buy a CD. Yes, you can open an account directly with the U.S. Treasury Department, or, you know, utilize a financial advisor, or if your banker would be knowledgeable too about how to buy these. So now Florida does not have a state income tax, so you're not going to get anything, a rate of return higher than a CD, whether you buy a treasury or you buy a CD from the bank. But I'm a fan of also municipal bonds that are tax-free in high tax states. So you have to kind of do your homework. I know people love to go in the bank and it's easy just to renew them, but becoming knowledgeable about other options, especially if you're in a high tax state, is a good idea. Bruce.
Peg, you're so good. I mean, that was such a good answer. And while you were answering, I was thinking in my head the follow-up question I was going to give you, and then you went there at the end, but maybe even elaborate a little bit more and explain to listeners about municipal bonds or municipal bond funds, because it's something that I've used with a lot of my high-income clients. The net yield on the investor, excuse me, the gross yield might be a little bit lower interest rate than something else that you could do. But if that's something else you have to pay the taxes, then what's your net return? on a double tax exempt muni or muni fund. And I live in the state of Minnesota and I'm in a high tax bracket. So I've looked at these for my own personal investment portfolio as well. If I can avoid state and federal taxes, that's attractive to me. And that's attractive, you know, to a lot of investors in a high tax bracket. And if they're paying, you know, not just federal taxes, but state taxes. So talk a little bit more about munis. What are they? How do they work? Where do you use them, you know, with your clients and so on? Because I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to take you down the road, but you went there before I did.
Yeah, so municipal bonds are issued by municipalities. By the way, Olivia, Minnesota, Bruce, that's one that I bought because I'm thinking, how, it's Bruce Helmer's hometown. I mean, how can you go wrong? You know, but so you know, a lot of cities will issue bonds for school for their schools and their roads, and a lot of times they get money from the national or the, you know, the estate fund that they could use and borrow. But there's one thing about municipal bonds in that they will look like they're a lower rate than treasuries or your CDs in the bank. And the reason it depends on what your tax bracket is because if you get income, which you do, they pay usually semi-annually. You can choose to reinvest, but if you buy the individual bond like I did in Olivia, then you get that coupon. It's not really a coupon anymore, but they deposit that interest into your bank account. Or you could buy, you know, municipal bonds in the form of a mutual fund where you're going to be a mutual investor with a lot of other people that want to have municipal bonds. I keep saying that if you're in a higher tax bracket, there's a calculator out there that you could put in and say, hey, I'm in the 12% bracket or I'm in the 15% bracket and I have to add my Minnesota bracket. What's the equivalent to that? That's a good guide. So check with your financial advisor or your banker, or if you don't have one, you know, seek some help, because a lot of times if you do have high income tax, it's going to give you a higher return, not visually right away. You have to do the math first.
So kind of the bottom line is we like munis potentially for people in a high tax bracket, and we like it for non-qualified money. If it's IRA money, it's, you know, it doesn't really matter because you're not paying taxes along the way anyway. But munis, muni bond funds for non-qualified money, if you're in a high tax bracket, probably a pretty good idea for listeners. And Susie, I know we're about out of time. I'll end it right there.
All right, very good. I learned a lot the last hour. Hopefully our listeners did too. If you did not get your question answered, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE, or you can email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week.